the prohibition from 1985 of the admission of seatbelt evidence was removed. So what did that do? Well, it basically brought out of, you know, deep sleep Keck and Carnation, those two cases from the early 70s in the Texas Supreme Court. Although the court had not flatly prohibited the admissibility of seatbelt evidence, it had held that it could not be used to reduce the plaintiff's damages. Hence, in almost all cases, it would not be admissible. What would be the reason for it to be admitted if it was not going to reduce the plaintiff's damages? And that's where we were from 2004 until 2015. And in 2015, a very important Texas Supreme Court case, Neighbors, was decided. And in Neighbors, the Texas Supreme Court upended about 40 years of precedent. Now, let's look at what Neighbors did, and then let's also look at what Neighbors did not do, because there's a lot of confusion about Neighbors, what exactly it did and did not do. In Neighbors, you had a neighbor's truck going down the road in a vehicle with eight people in it. There was a little bit of conflict about how many were belted or unbelted, is in the process of passing on the left side of the neighbor's truck, the neighbor's truck. At that time, the neighbor's truck turns into the vehicle, strikes the vehicle rolls multiple times, and people are ejected. The defendant wanted to admit evidence about the failure of the occupants to wear seatbelts, a number of them, and the fact that the failure to wear those seatbelts injured the occupants. But the trial court did not allow it based on Keck and Carnation, those early 1970s Texas Supreme Court cases. So what happened with the case? How did the Texas Supreme Court analyze these facts and the state of the law? Well, the court put quite a bit of stock in the fact that Chapter 33 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code was enacted after Keck and after Carnation. And so the court was very concerned about what Chapter 33 would require in this circumstance. The court believed, and in fact cited the language from Chapter 33, that the jury must assign responsibility to anybody who causes or contributes in any way to the plaintiff's injury. And based on that language, the neighbors' courts found and determined that the legislature not only intended the jurors to consider pre-injury conduct that contributed to cause the injury, but under Chapter 33, the legislature actually was requiring the jurors to weigh that conduct, even though it was pre-injury conduct that did not lead to the crash. Now, the court noted and said that, well, we, the court, we're not abolishing the line between negligence that causes an occurrence versus negligence that causes an injury. But cynics would say the holding of Neighbors essentially does exactly that. This is not a mitigation of damages rationalization that the Neighbors Court used, because remember, mitigation of damages comes after, a failure to mitigate damage come after an occurrence, not before. The before conduct here, the pre-occurrence conduct, is failing to wear the seatbelt. And the Neighbors Court held that relevant evidence of use or non-use of seatbelts and relevant evidence of a plaintiff's pre-occurrence injury-causing conduct generally, and that means Neighbors may have application outside of just seatbelts, is admissible for the purpose of apportioning responsibility. So, of course, the jurors don't care why it's admissible. It's admissible on a specific theory, a specific legal theory for a specific purpose, but once it comes into evidence, oftentimes it has the effect of tarring the plaintiff in the juror's eyes. Now, can defendants assume that simply because a plaintiff is not wearing seatbelts, the court must and automatically will allow that fact into evidence? And the answer is no. Neighbors, in the opinion in Neighbors, erects some hurdles that defendants are going to have to get over before the evidence will come in. Defendants are going to have to show that the failure to wear seatbelts caused injury. More about that in a minute. They're going to have to have a hearing about this outside the presence of the jury for the court to consider the evidence before the court rules. And then the court's going to have to consider whether the probative value of this evidence of failure to wear a seatbelt outweighs the prejudicial nature of it under Rule 403 of the Texas Rules of Evidence. All that is required in the neighbor's court. Now, what about this requirement that defendants show a causal nexus between the failure to wear the seatbelt and the plaintiff's injuries? Is that necessarily and automatically going to require a defendant to have expert testimony on the issue? Well, the Texas Supreme Court opined on the issue, weighed in on it, and said, although it's not always required, in our opinion, it's often going to be required. And I would suggest to you, if you're a defendant and you don't have it, you risk the court excluding the evidence. So your safest course of action is to have a biomechanical expert of some kind connect up the failure to wear the seatbelt in the crash to the plaintiff's injuries, if you're the defendant and you want that evidence in. And now let's switch gears and talk about the second of the two outcome determinative issues I want to visit with you about today, police officer testimony.